and welcome back to the Mouth of the Time podcast brought to you by the Shields Gazette. I'm Joe Buck, and today I'm joined by Dom Skerr. Dom, how are you?
I'm not bad, Joe. It's been a good start to 2023, all things considered, for Newcastle. Obviously, would like a bit more action in terms of transfers, but can't really complain. 14 games unbeaten in the Premier League into the semi-final of the Carabao Cup, which I'm sure we'll get onto. But yeah, all going well at the moment.
It is, it really is. And it's been a while since the last ones we've done this, festive commitments and all that have paid that. But a quick whistle stop tour of what's happened since our last podcast. Newcastle reached the Carabao Cup quarterfinals, beat Leicester 3-0 on Boxing Day. They got frustrated by Leeds United at home. They then frustrated Arsenal away from home, become the only team to take a point from Arsenal at the Emirates. They then lost to a League One side in the FA Cup. And then in true Newcastle form, bounced back and reached their first domestic cup semi-final since 2005. Dan Byrne became an internet sensation after scoring his first goal for the club. And then back to the league, you know, defeated Fulham, kept another clean sheet and sit third in the table. It's never quiet in Newcastle, I'll tell you that. So that's been the last couple of weeks or month or so at Newcastle. But first, we've got to talk about the Carabao Cup, Dom. As I said, first semi-final since 2005. Southampton, it's going to be a tricky game, but it's surely one of their best chances of getting not just a major final, but even lifting that silverware in decades, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, like you say, 18 years since the last semi-final. I think the big one for me, I mean, as much as I'd want to see Newcastle win a major trophy in the League Cup, it's been 23 years. They've never visited Wembley on merit, if you like, in a cup competition, the new Wembley. It's been 23 years since the last visit to the old Wembley. So just that occasion, getting to a final would be so big for Newcastle in the first full season under Eddie Howe and the new owners. So that's just a massive statement. Obviously, Southampton over two legs. It's nice to be going into a semi-final as favourites, but with that is a potential banana skin. Southampton, obviously, bottom of the Premier League, and Newcastle's record, albeit the recent record at St Mary's isn't too bad, but the overall record down there leaves a lot to be desired. So it's a tricky one, absolutely. And Newcastle have shown that they are prone to slipping up in the cup competitions. Sheffield Wednesday just a couple of weeks ago being a prime example of that. So a lot of people I'm speaking to are talking like Newcastle are already at Wembley, but I think it's fair to say they've got two tough games against the Premier League side who've knocked out the red hot favourites in Manchester City already. So it's not going to be easy. Hopefully Newcastle can get something down at Southampton, and the big thing for me is that second leg being at St James's Park. Regardless of the result down at Southampton, as long as Newcastle are still in the tie, you'll always fancy Newcastle's chances of progressing. Considering they're playing the second leg at St James's Park, 52,000 fans cheering the side on. There's that sort of aura around the night games at St James's Park too. You go into them, I was saying to you last night, you just don't feel like Newcastle are going to lose at St James's Park at the moment, particularly in those nighttime games. So that's going to be a big occasion for Newcastle. And hopefully they can get it over the line and get to the final. And yeah, if you can do that, then anything's possible on the day. I think Manchester United would be tough opponents, but Newcastle have shown that they're capable of going toe-to-toe with them. And then Nottingham Forest, if they pull off a shock and get through to the final. Yeah, that's going to be a difficult one, because if you get all the way to the final and then play Nottingham Forest and lose, that would be particularly tough to take. But either way, great to be looking forward to a semi-final game and have a very realistic chance of winning a major trophy for the first time since 1969. So yeah, really positive.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that the main key from the draw was getting that second leg at St James's, because even if they go down to St Mary's, as you say, and even if they're behind after the first leg, which I hope's not the case, but even if that does happen, you do fancy themselves to get something to St James's. And you say the crowd will be up for it. And, you know, they're unbeaten so far at home this season. And if you don't get beat in a cup game, you know, you go on to win it, simple as that. They obviously returned to St. James's in the Premier League on Sunday, defeated Fulham. We'll talk about that game in a minute, but right now, they currently sit third. Are we talking about top four? Are we talking about a title challenge, maybe? I know there's been a lot on social media about Manchester United being talked as, you know, one of the people in the title race, and Newcastle sit above them in the league table. So what do you make of that? Are Newcastle in the title race, and probably more realistically, is top four a realistic option this year?
No, I refuse to admit Newcastle in the title race. Arsenal are just too far clear, I think. As good a season as Newcastle have had, and you're looking at it, one loss in 19, Arsenal are still well clear at the top of the table. I think a team like Man City are capable of potentially catching Arsenal, given their sort of track record and pedigree of going on these sort of 15-game winning streaks towards the back end of the season and things like that, that can basically propel you into a very comfortable position at the top of the Premier League. So I think Man City possibly are in it. To be honest, I can't see Man U, unless they continue this good form that on for pretty much the remainder of the season. I can't see Man U mounting too serious a title challenge. They could nick second, but if they can catch Arsenal, I'd be surprised. And I think Newcastle are in a similar bracket, which is nice to say. I think Newcastle are in a similar bracket to Manchester United, but given the strength of Newcastle's squad, I think the starting 11, brilliant. After that, few injuries set in. We've got Bruno out at the moment. If he was out for any sustained extended period of time, the squad looks decidedly weaker. So that's just the one thing for me. I don't think Newcastle's squad is strong enough to mount a serious title charge. And with less than 2 weeks left of the transfer window, I don't think Newcastle would be able to get the players in that would strengthen the squad enough to mount that. But on a more positive note, I think top four is very realistic. Nothing I've seen so far this season from Newcastle shows to me why they can't get top four. I think they've been excellent for the most part this season. Even when they haven't been excellent, they've been able to grind out results. And you're looking at the table, I mean, 19 games in, we've played pretty much every team with the exception of West Ham, I think it is. And 5 points clear of Spurs, 10 points clear of Liverpool and Chelsea. If you were offered that at the midway stage of the season, you'd take your hand off. So that is a big boost for Newcastle, having a bit of breathing room between teams that you'd consider direct rivals for a Champions League spot. It's just about keeping that gap, maintaining that gap for the rest of the season. I think the gap will inevitably close, particularly with Liverpool and Chelsea. I think they'll probably pick up the form after the January window. And I think the only thing probably stopping us from saying, yeah, definitely Newcastle can get top four, is just the sort of ingrained pessimism from watching Newcastle over the years. You look at 5 point leads, 10 point leads, whatever it is, you always think, oh, they're going to have a bad run of form. I still think they might. Where that run of form will come, I'm not sure, but I think given the way the squad is, if injuries back end of the season, it's going to be tough for them at some stage. Every team has a little blip, and Newcastle fortunately haven't had one so far. But I think when you're talking 5-10 points at the top end of the table, it's a completely different scenario to what it is at the bottom. I mean, at the bottom of the table, a couple of wins, you can really get yourself out of it, whereas at the top end of the table, teams are winning most weeks, so it's about avoiding the defeat. So I think those 5-10 point gaps could close quite quickly if Newcastle were to lose, say, a couple of games in a row, which at the moment they don't look like doing, but things can change quite quickly in football. So we'll see what happens. But as it stands, I don't think Newcastle are title contenders, but I think anything I think top four Champions League qualification is realistic at this stage, and I think anything less than Europa League qualification would probably be seen as a disappointment based on how they've started the first half of the season.
Absolutely, totally agree. I know you mentioned it. It's just nice to Newcastle not have to worry about that bottom of the table, because it's so bunched up down there, and you've seen, you know, Everton recently, Southampton, even West Ham right down there. So it's nice to be mixing it with the big boys, and Newcastle have been mixing it with the big boys pretty much all year. They've been ruffling a few feathers as well. Before the Fulham game, we saw a banner, Eddie Howe's banner with his quote, "We're not here to be popular, we're here to compete." Now, from a fan's point of view, I think that's exactly what you want to hear your manager say, because for too long, Newcastle have just been a club happy to be, you know, drifting in the Premier League, not really, you know, challenging either end of the table. But they are ruffling feathers, aren't they, with their performances. We saw against Arsenal, you know, that there was a lot of fallout from that game, and Newcastle were told, you know, there was complaints that they parked the bus, but I don't think they did that game. I think they just, you know, stopped Arsenal doing what they wanted to do, and, you know, turn up with a game plan and execute it perfectly. And I think that stands them in good stead for the rest of the season. So that type of quote, it's definitely throughout the whole team. They clearly believe that, and they're clearly doing anything in every game to compete for them 3 points, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of it is the big teams. I think Arsenal being a prime example, throwing the toys out of the pram a little bit. I mean, Arsenal's record against Newcastle, being used to walking all over them, particularly at the Emirates Stadium. So for them to go there and just frustrate the life out of Arsenal, it took its toll at the end on the Arsenal side. And I think, obviously, a couple of penalty decisions going against you isn't going to help. I can understand Arsenal's frustration from that point. But Newcastle, the setup to frustrate teams, like you say, not park the bus, but the getting the opposition faces, the way they play, and it's not just the manner in which they play and the high press and things like that. There is a bit of gamesmanship involved as well. We saw against Fulham in particular, there's probably three or four examples of a bit of gamesmanship on Sunday, whether it was Callum Wilson scuffing the penalty spot for Mitrovic to then go on and miss. Joe Linton as well, getting involved in Marco Silva's team talk, Jacob Murphy kicking the ball away, things like that. Just the small things that add up. And I mean, if another team does it, you don't like to see it, but Newcastle, you can't condone it as such, but if it's getting your wins, like Eddie Howe says, not there to be popular, there to compete. And if they're getting wins and that's helping them getting wins, then you can't really complain. It's up to the referee to clamp down on certain things. And it's good to see Newcastle are not a soft touch anymore, if you like. They're not just laying down for teams. They're really getting in the faces of the opposition. And I don't think it's any coincidence when you look at the teams Newcastle faced this season, the ones who've been charged by the FA for failing to control the staff or the players have been Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal and Tottenham Hotspur. So basically big six teams, if you like. So it shows that tides are changing. Newcastle are there to compete in a technical sense, but also in a sort of gamesmanship sense as well. And I've got no problem with it at all. And if it's helping Newcastle pick up points and win games, then long may it continue.
Absolutely. I think a big example of when you say times are changing, I think that would be Sunday's game. It felt for 89 minutes that it was just going to be one of them days where Newcastle weren't going to score no matter what they did. Fulham played very well, to be fair. I think they were probably one of the better teams to have come to St. James's Park, maybe bar Manchester City all season. But they did get the win at the end. Alexander Isak, great to see him back in the starting, not in the starting team, sorry, but just back playing. It's going to feel like a new signing almost, him being back. So what do you think his role will be in Newcastle going forward? Because obviously you've got Wilson as their main man. They like to play with the front three, with two wingers either side. Where does he sort of fit in?
Well, it's an interesting one because he came on and he was spoke to him after the game. He was almost in a number 10 role, really, just behind Wilson. And I think that was quite effective, to be honest, where he had Saint-Maximin on the left and you had Miguel Almirón and then later Jacob Murphy on the right. And and Isak just behind Wilson. And I think that's potentially moving forward something Newcastle could look at, or whether you put Isak on the left as well. He's shown his ability to cut inside and cause problems from that side as well. So I think moving forward, is if Callum Wilson stays fit, he's always going to be the number nine, if you like, the main striker. Isak, all he can do is keep impressing when he gets on the pitch, keep scoring goals, and give Eddie Howe a decision to make in terms of the starting lineup. But if Isak is going to start, for example, on Saturday, Crystal Palace, potentially that number 10 role is something you could look at if you almost do a swap for Bruno, who could be out there with his injury. You push Joe Willock, Sean Longstaff further back and have that very quite attacking lineup. That's something Eddie Howe could consider. I'm not sure, but that's certainly proved effective for Newcastle on Sunday, against Fulham, and led to them getting the win. So ideally for Isak, I'm sure he'd want to be playing as the main man, the main striker, but you've got to balance the squad as best you can from Eddie Howe's perspective. So he's shown, fortunately, that he can be useful in a number of positions, and it's just about getting the best out of him and the squad as a whole without hurting it too much.
Absolutely, and I'd say the options at Eddie Howe's disposal, it's great to see, because there is plenty of, you know, high quality options there as well. One person you mentioned who hasn't had a kick recently, really, has been Saint-Maximin. Obviously, he played 45 minutes the other day following Bruno's injury. Bruno, we, you know, hope is going to be out for a week, potentially back for the Carabao Cup semi-finals. It obviously looked a little bit more, it looked worse of a problem when he came off, but that seems to be okay now. So with his injury, do you think that's a route for Saint-Maximin back into the team? Do you think going into Palace's game, the game against Palace on Saturday, Eddie Howe might pick the team that, you know, started that second half with Willock and Joe Linton in midfield with Saint-Maximin on the left?
That seems the obvious choice. I mean, Isak, will speak about him getting in the lineup after the game on Sunday. He still said he's not quite fully fit, whereas Saint-Maximin is a lot closer to that, even though he hasn't started a Premier League game since August. So I think Saint-Maximin, if he weren't to start, it would speak volumes at Crystal Palace. It's a sort of the easy decision for Eddie Howe to make, where we need a left winger. He's a left winger. We can put him on. So if he weren't to do that, it does make a statement for me. So I think Saint-Maximin, when he came on, I think he did an all right job on Sunday against Fulham. He nearly scored. He created. He put a couple of good balls in. He's always going to be lively, even if he is frustrating. But I think he's shown this season against Man City, the winner, the equaliser he scored at Wolves. He's a capable player and he's capable of making the difference. It's just times have changed for Newcastle now. He is not the difference maker anymore, if you like. He's not the... because for seasons under Steve Bruce, the tactic was basically give the ball to Saint-Maximin and see what he can do. Whereas now it's a lot more well thought out, it's a lot more structured. And Saint-Maximin is, in his own words, not important anymore for Newcastle. He is merely just that impact sub, it's turned into. So I think it's an opportunity for him if he is in the starting lineup on Saturday at Palace to really sort of make himself known, put himself in Eddie Howe's thoughts, because we all know what he's capable of doing. It's just always been a consistency thing for him. And I think defensively, that it's a bit of a lazy thing to say. I think Alan Saint-Maximin doesn't track back, because for me, I think he's come on considerably in that regard. I mean, he's still far off the likes of Joe Linton and Joe Willock, but you remember the game he got injured? It did his hamstring at Wolves. He did that from running probably 70 yards to try and stop a goal, which still went in, but fortunately got disallowed. So I think he has come on under Eddie Howe in terms of a defensive... having a defensive mindset, still got a lot of work to do. But I think Yeah, if he starts on Saturday, it's a big opportunity for him. And if he doesn't, it's a big statement made by Eddie Howe, and his future, his days could be numbered at the club.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think St. Maximin, it's built from him Saturday. I mean, I don't want to disrespect Palace, but you know, Crystal Palace they're not in the best of forms. It should be players Newcastle go there full of confidence and hoping maybe to, you know, get a couple of goals. And it could be something that St. Maximin really takes advantage of. You know, he seems to thrive when, you know, Palace will have to come on to Newcastle. They won't be able to sit back the whole game. They might get some joy down the wings, but Palace is going to be a difficult game. They all are in the Premier League, but it's an ideal chance for Newcastle to continue this momentum and just keep building and building. We've seen how good the defensive unit is. You know, they're not conceding any goals. We talked about yesterday that Nick Pope just doesn't do anything in the goal in a nice possible way. I think he's probably made one save against Arsenal from Nketiah's shot, and that's all I can remember him doing in the last two or three games. And that's nothing against Nick Pope. That's just how solid the defence have been. And that's obviously what their form has been built on this season. So how do you see the game against Palace going on Saturday?
It's an interesting one. Like you say, they're not in the best of form. I think the frustrated Newcastle at St James's Park in the reverse fixture, and then again in the Carabao Cup. So hopefully it's not a third goalless draw of the season. I think Newcastle got back to winning ways against Fulham. You hope the confidence from that will continue. The one thing you could be slightly critical of Newcastle for is not taking the chances. So I'd like to see them be a bit more clinical on Saturday, because, I mean, it's one goal they've scored since that Leicester game in the Premier League, and that was Alexander Isak's goal. They really should have scored more than what they have the past few games. So I'd like to see them really push, try and be as clinical as possible, which is easier said than done. But I think if they take the game to Palace, like you say, Palace won't be able to park the bus for 90 minutes against them. So if they can really push Palace, find a way for to adapt if Bruno's not playing, which potentially, like we say, could involve St. Maximin, then I can't see why Newcastle can't go to this game and win it. But I don't know. I think Palace, potentially a tricky side, but we're getting to that stage now where any team Newcastle face, there's not too much fear. You never know. You can lose any game. Like you say, every game in the Premier League's hard, but you're going into games with Newcastle expecting them to at least compete and potentially pick up 3 points. And I wouldn't be surprised if Newcastle went and done that on Saturday.
I'll put you on the spot. Quick answer here. Do you think Howe will rotate any of his team ahead of obviously the two big Southampton games coming up in midweek over the next couple of weeks? Do you think there'll be some rotation at Selhurst Park?
No. I don't think he'll make any serious changes. There might be the odd one, like you say, St. Maximin coming in, Isak coming in potentially. I don't think there'll be anywhere near wholesale changes. Two really important games at the end of the day. I'd say possibly the Carabao Cup game takes priority, albeit with it being two legs, there's a bit more breathing room, if you like. So, yeah, I can't see Eddie Howe making too many changes. The squad have shown that they're fit enough to play a game on a Saturday and another game on a Tuesday and with effectively the same lineup and be competitive in both games. So, yeah, I don't see Eddie Howe making too many changes.
Finally, Dom, because obviously we couldn't do a podcast in January without asking about potential incomings or outgoings in Newcastle. It's over half the window's gone. We've not seen anyone come in. Obviously, Grant Kowal came in and went off on loan to Hearts, but there's been lots of links, as always, with Newcastle over the last few transfer windows. Do you think there'll be much business between now and the end of the window? And what sort of areas would you think Newcastle might be targeting if there was going to be any business?
Yeah, I still think it's been slow. With less than 2 weeks left, I still think Newcastle will make a couple of signings, and I think it will go quite late in the window. We saw last year, deadline day in January, Newcastle made two signings with Dan Burn and Matt Target coming in, tried to sign Hugo Ekitike as well. I'd expect sign Bruno Guimaraes later on as well. So I'd expect a similar end to the window for Newcastle where the business gets done late on, as you tend to find with January, where players become maybe a bit restless, potentially become available, loans start to come into the equation as well. So I'm fairly relaxed about Newcastle going into the final, 13 days of the window. I think they'll make a couple signings still. And I think the priority for me has to probably be the central midfield position. Even though Bruno's short-term, Jonjo Shelvey will be back next month, I still think there's the need that number six, that natural sort of deep line playmaker, if you like, who can really help Newcastle take things to the next level. As good as Sean Longstaff has been, as good as Joe Willock has been, they're not quite the natural number six that Bruno can be. And I think sometimes he gets shackled to that a bit more. He's more of a number eight. So if Newcastle can get a more natural defensive midfielder in, that would be a big boost. And I think always you're looking, you've had even Fresneda from Valladolid linked, bit slow in terms of the progress on that one. I'm just not one that I'm overly confident in happening, given the amount of interest that he's attracting. But a right back is something Newcastle could look at in terms of cover for Kieran Trippier, with Emile Kraft out for pretty much the rest of the season, and Javier Manquillo is just unconvincing cover for me. So if you can get someone in that regard and attacking, if you can get this talk of potentially Chris Wood going out on loan, I think that would only happen if you can bring a striker in instead who would compete directly with Callum Wilson and Alexander Isak. So yeah, I think for me, a central midfielder is the priority. A right back, cover, and another attacking player would be a bonus. But I think strengthening the squad overall, getting a few new faces in who won't disrupt things too much, would mark a successful window for Newcastle.
Brilliant. And as always, the best way to stay up to date with all the latest Newcastle United transfer news is with the Shields Gazette, who are currently running a January offer on our fantastic Newcastle United coverage. You get 50% off a sports subscription when you use the code January, January 50, when you sign up online. And yeah, it's January. It's going to be a busy month. So get using that offer ASAP. Dom, thank you for joining me today. Hopefully next time we do this, it's not too long in the future and Newcastle are maybe Wembley bound. Who knows?
Cheers, Joe.
Thank you for all the listeners for joining us on this week's Mouth of the Tyne podcast.